Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Great to have you along today on Connecting Faith. Looking forward to a good conversation ahead as we talk contentment and generosity. And we'll talk money. You know, it says in Ecclesiastes, whoever loves money will never have money enough. But we're going to talk about how we can have a new money mindset and be generous. And Ted, this is the time of year where lots of opportunities to be generous.
There are, you know, year-end giving. I mean, There is a tax write-off. That's an incentive, but it shouldn't be your motivation. We'll talk about that today on the show.
And we also want to mention that we're partnering with Angel Tree during this month. Christmas is a difficult time. One in 28 American school-age children have an incarcerated parent, and so you can help make a difference. $99 can help reach six children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. I want to encourage you to go to angeltree.org and make your gift today, or you can find the link on our website at myfaithradio.com.
While you're there at myfaithradio.com, be in prayer. Our winter share also is next week, and we'll be talking more about that as time goes on, but you could give now at myfaithradio.com.
Well, today on Connecting Faith, we're going to talk about money, and particularly our relationship with money, and maybe it's going to result in getting us to a new mindset. Looking forward to spending a little time with Brad Hewitt. Brad's president and CEO of Thrivent Financial. They're the country's largest fraternal benefit society. It's a Fortune 500 organization. Thrivent is leading a nationwide movement of Christians and their communities to be wise with money and live generously. And we'll find out about that. Brad has written, along with James Moline, a great book called Your New Money Mindset, Creating a Healthy Relationship with Money. We do have a copy, by the way, of the book to give away, and we'll do that via an email drawing, so you can connect with us on our Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com and just sign up for that. And Brad, good to see you again. Thanks for coming back to Connecting Faith.
It's my pleasure and honor to be here. I love talking about this.
Well, I'm curious to know just, I mean, the new money mindset, I think all of us probably, if we did some serious study about it, realize that we have differing views about how we relate to money. But talk a little about maybe you personally. Did a new money mindset become a reality to you at some point along your journey of life?
You know, I actually think there's been a few steps along the way. One is I think it was a step of obedience, and I saw it demonstrated by my grandfather and my parents about, you know, doing things with money and being being generous in a way of, I would describe it more as an obedient mindset to tithe, to do things like that. But as I say, I come across my stinginess, you know, genetically, I think, you know, the other side of it is, you know, that it never felt like the joyful generosity that you read about in the Bible. And I think that process, while it maybe started with some obedience, it really took a change of heart for me. And I think there were a few steps along the way, and we can maybe talk about a few of them along the way. But, you know, one big step was when Sue and I got married, and we had to all of a sudden blend our finances and start having conversations, which was a big step. Another big step for in my career when I moved to work from a business where I was pretty successful to go to work for a church at a fraction of what I was making in the business world. And we had to reassess our money mindset at that point. That was kind of a big, courageous step along the way. And then I think as we've actually, as our kids grew older and we started to actually think of what kind of character we would want and what did success look like for our kids in terms of their attitude towards money. But all along the way, I would say God is changing my heart of stone into a heart of flesh. So there wasn't one big thing, but there's been a series of them.
I think all of us can relate to that. In fact, it was just kind of fun to read the book again, Your New Money Mindset, because you tell a couple of car stories, and I was thinking about, you know, most of us, I guess, we learn better money habits by making bad money choices.
And cars usually ended up with they ended poorly in my case.
My father-in-law, for a wedding gift, basically gave my wife and I their sedan, but it was the wrong brand and color and style. And I ended up trading that off shortly after for something that proved to be really a bad choice, and ended up trading that car off about 6 weeks later, and just kind of losing each step of the way. And I thought, why was I so silly about that? Just, I mean, car, I don't know, maybe you had your Dodge Charger, right?
My Dodge Charger, the thing that prevented me from going to college in some ways, you know. It's we were joking about it, is you know, and I still think that was a cool car.
Sure.
You know, it's even after 45 years or 50 years, it still seems like you know, probably I would still make that bad choice again.
You
know, somehow I think. Yeah. But, you know, in some ways, that's how you learn, right? I mean,
Yeah. You
know, and that's part of what Jim and I, when we wrote the book, tried to start with a real sense of grace when it came to money. Because we all make really bad choices. In fact, one of the things in the small group study that we encourage is to people to talk about some of the bad choices they made with money.
Yeah.
As long as they're far enough in the past that they can laugh about them, because it is in some ways a healing process to say, you know, we all fall, we all fail with money. It's and today's a new day.
Well, I guess maybe the question is, how do we make sure that we are learning from those bad choices? I mean, because there, you know, we probably all know people who repeat those same choices, and they just get in deeper and deeper.
Well, as you know, in the book, I have demonstrated that I have not learned. Yeah. Although what it took was for me. So I think there's probably three or four bad car stories about my behaviors in buying cars, and it was really the spiritual discipline that when I asked, if in the book I talked about the pastor, I said, what should I do? I'm just trying to get some counsel. And he said, I think you need to go on a car fast. And that idea of fasting, I had never thought of a car fast, but it was, you know, to actually just try to be content with something for 7 years. Which seems easy. And it wasn't like I was buying new cars. Yeah. I was buying used cars, you know, but it just, I could never be content. And it was one of those spiritual disciplines to learn to be content with something. And you know, as after that 7 year spiritual fast, spiritual car fast, I haven't made a bad car choice. I've made poor choices, but I haven't made a really poor car choice because of that discontent.
Well, that's really at the heart of what you're talking about in the book, too, isn't it? And the heart of our kind of money challenges, right? It's that spirit of discontent.
Right. And well, part of the theme for the whole thing is that this idea of a relationship with money, what I hear over and over again from people is boy, I never thought about a relationship with money. And yet, it really is a relationship with money. In fact, as we know in the Bible, it talks about, you know, the roots of all kinds of evil is the love of money. Well, love is a relationship term, not an accounting term when it comes to money. And so this love of money and the things that come out of that, and what we've discovered in working with millions of people across the country, is that if you can start with the heart, and that's where like the fasting and some of the other things come into play, it really helps the habits and the other things. And if you start with the habits and you don't start with the heart, it becomes a real challenge to change your behaviors, to put into practice some of the healthy relationship with money behaviors you want.
Are we honest, I mean, with ourselves or maybe with our spouse, our families, when we talk about money? I mean, do we admit, you know, how we really feel it or the kind of relationship we have in money?
Well, actually, that's one of the biggest problems. We actually don't talk about money. I remember a story that was one time as my dad and I were working on the basement of our house. He was helping me remodel it. Our kids were little, and I think he wanted to have this conversation with me about money, and I was expecting you shouldn't be expanding and doing all this. And it was a conversation about him and his money, and he had never shared really his journey with money because it was just something he didn't want to talk about. And I think the observation I would make around a lot of people, couples, families, small groups, money is an off the list topic to talk about. And so I actually think part of why we wanted to create this conversation about our relationship with money, it's so much easier to talk about our relationship with money to some degree than our balance sheet or our checking account, or because that's we can talk about bad mistakes we made about buying cars and laugh about it. It's a little harder to talk about our bank account.
Yeah. But that was certainly, I mean, that's probably not so much the case today, but certainly, the generation of our parents, I mean, there was never any conversation about that with the kids, certainly.
Yeah. And I think we're getting better at it. Well, I'd still say money is just one of those topics that's still very difficult. And, that kind of when I speak, one of the jokes I usually use is, when I was growing up, at dinner, polite dinner conversation didn't include religion, sex, money, and politics. And now the only one that's still off the table is money.
That's true. We're talking money today, but about creating a healthy relationship with money. Brad Heard is my guest. Brad's president, CEO of Thrivent Financial, and he's co-authored this great book, Your New Money Mindset, co-wrote it with Jim Moline. We do have a copy of it to give away, and we're going to do that via email drawing. So if you want to sign up for that, and just go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, and then let us know that you'd like to sign up for that. Give us your contact information. We'll put you in for the drawing for this great new book, and we'll have more with Brad Hugh in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and Brad Hugh's in studio today as we talk money, your new money mindset, creating a healthy relationship with money. Brad's president and CEO of Thrivent Financial. Or a Fortune 500 organization, and Brad's made his work to help us rediscover a healthy relationship with money, and the idea that being wise with money and generosity go hand in hand in the heart of this relationship. You mentioned, Brad, about talking about this issue, and one of the steps that you experienced in terms of growing was getting married and having to suddenly combine resources and talk about this. I mean, I think all of us probably in our marriages know that money conversation is still one of the tension points. So how do we talk with our spouse and work through differing backgrounds, histories, viewpoints?
Well, one way is to actually recognize that we actually do have relationships with money, that we have experiences and cultures and family systems that we have. These come with us into a marriage. And now more and more with young folks, student debt and other things come with into that relationship. When Sue and I got married, I remember some of the conversations we had was specifically, how do we think about giving to church? I mean, when we got married, interest rates were over 18%, trying to figure out how could we ever afford a house. And, and so spending time actually talking about a budget and how we're going to spend. I think part of the reason that conversation can be difficult is sometimes people have very different emotional relationships with money. And it's actually pulling that out is what are some of those emotional relationships. And luckily for Sue and I, we actually had very similar backgrounds and parents and beliefs and behaviors. And so that really wasn't that hard of a conversation. But I have other friends where it was the issue that really caused the relationship to have strain early on in their relationships.
You talk about there's, I think, five S's or five S attitudes toward money. Let's just say a bit more about that, and we can kind of find our place maybe in this continuum.
Yeah, the one of the things is, again, we've worked with millions of people, is we started to find that there were really simply some ways to categorize, and these aren't perfect categorizations, but I think you'll get the notion of it, is the relationship people had with money was either they had no relationship because they literally were surviving from day to day, and so they had no money, no relationship. And then they had what I would describe as a really unhealthy relationship with money, and it was stressful, and it created all kinds of issues in their life, and we call that group struggling, tended to live paycheck to paycheck, and all kinds of bad, emotional, very high tension when it came to money. And then the next one up was stable. We called it, that they had kind of worked out some of the tension. The irony of that one is, as we kind of observed, is they were kind of one bad thing away from moving back to struggling. And then secure, which was they had kind of worked through a lot of that. They had figured out how to how to manage their budget and everything. But they didn't. They still didn't feel like they had what I would call an abundant mindset. It was money was still a real issue for them, but they had enough, but really couldn't share. And then there was surplus. And this was a really interesting relationship with money, whereas they actually had a sense of contentment. They had a sense of abundance. Their mindset was very much of, I'm going to be fine, and I trust God for my provision, and if I see somebody else in need, I'm ready to share. And that was what we observed with the people that had really healthy relationships with money.
And this continuum from surviving to stable to surplus isn't based on actual income, right? Or the finances that you have.
No, in fact, that was actually the biggest surprise as we started to work with this. Now I would say that, you know, if you had modest income, it became a lot harder to be in the surplus or secure mindset. It took either years or time or whatever. But what was fascinating is their mindset and their behaviors determined where they were on the continuum much more than their income or their balance sheet or their budget or any of the financial things that you'd normally go to measure. And so what we discovered is that the relationship with money actually mattered more than the amount of money. And it's not real surprising because often beliefs actually create behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot of what they believed about money that drove the behavior.
I think all of us, I mean, certainly as Christ followers, want to get to that place of the surplus mentality because that's really at the heart of the gospel, right? It's right. Generosity.
Absolutely. And well, and that's where generosity fit into this because that was part of your question is how do those two connect? And as we looked at this, there were two pieces that actually drove people to actually move up in terms of mindset. And what one was gratitude and one was generosity. And I especially think generosity is this really fascinating thing because we described it in the book and what we see in people's life is that generosity is both the prescription and the outcome of somebody who's in surplus. And so oftentimes people think, well, if I'm going to move from one category to the next, I need to get more income and then I'll be generous. And what the reality was is just the opposite. If you became generous, it became easier to move up to the category because you actually learn to be content, you learn to live within your means, you learn to live in a completely different way. And so actually generosity was a tool to use to move up instead of what most people think is, well, if I just got 25% more, then I would be able to be generous. And it doesn't work that way.
Because I know you've even done study or they've done studies of those that are incredibly rich, and they want 25% more too.
Right. So, we all do. And what ends up happening is that as soon as you get 25% more, you just change your lifestyle, and the lifestyle changes much more than your behaviors or habits. And so it really does get to what your mindset is around how you manage money. And that's true, again, as you think about a spouse, that's true as you're thinking about your kids. And it's that how do you cultivate that mindset that's really more important. And part of it, as Christians, we also believe that everything we have is a gift from God. And so it's not our money anyway. The only thing we own is our mindset towards money. He owns all the money.
So say more about how that's going to lead us to contentment. Because I think, you know, people might kind of push back on that and say, well, that's sort of easy for you to say, Brad, you're CEO of Thrivent. But, you know,
I haven't always been.
Okay. Yes. So how did it work in your life to really how is generosity and contentment, how are they linked together?
So what's really fascinating is as we've continued to do more research about what are the behaviors that drive you towards the surplus mindset, there's actually one behavior that actually is 25 times, you know, between 20 and 30 times more important than anything else. And it's something that it's kind of obvious when you hear it, but it's so important. And it's intentionally living well below your means, regardless of what income you're at. And so what's interesting is generosity actually is one of the things that actually helps us actually figure out how to intentionally live below our means. And the secret sauce in generosity is if you're actually always striving for 25% more, you're always looking up to see who has more, what. It's the keeping up with the Joneses syndrome, and you can always, almost everybody can find somebody who's 25% better off than they are. Normally, when you're being generous, what ends up happening is you're looking to people who actually need help, and you have a very, it creates a sense of blessedness. It creates a sense of, boy, I could actually live with less. And so it's this really fascinating tool that actually helps us actually accomplish that living below our means. And you know, a lot of other finance books talk about debt or some of the other things, and those do play a role, but they pale in comparison to the idea that the things that really drive it is living below your means, a mindset of abundance, and a mindset of contentment. And those mindsets of abundance and contentment come as we become as we live out and practice generosity. So, you know, why and how, God only knows. But I would just say from our research and our observation, it's one of those wonderful blessings. And I would maybe just say that it's because we're also imitating God. God's a God of generosity. And when we imitate God's generosity, in our life, what we see is the blessings that come.
Just so counterintuitive, isn't it? I mean, he who refreshes others is himself refreshed. You know, one gives freely and gains even more. I mean, you just go, well, you know, the world just can't comprehend that, really, can it?
And you know, we hear those over and over again, and we accept those as being true. And yet in practice, the world and economics say there's scarcity. Yeah. You know, there's only so much in the pie. You got to get your share, and so it's this really upside down view of is God is a God of abundance and not a God of scarcity.
But somehow, I guess, you know, some of us have grown up being kind of leery of when you start talking God is the God of abundance. It feels like it's leading into sort of a prosperity kind of mindset. That's not what we're talking about here, though.
Not at all. In fact, I get that question all the time, and. My observation is that it's one of these really fascinating things is as you become generous, it's not a magic formula that therefore, you know, if you sow, you know, one, you'll get 100. But it actually works like that a lot, you know. and again, it's a biblical truth that plays out in practice, but it's not a using God as the magic potion to get more for ourselves. And in fact, if you're really going to be generous, it's sacrifice. It's not doing it with a motivation to get more. And I think if we do it with a motivation to get more, we miss the value.
We're talking about generosity. We're talking about your new money mindset, create a healthy relationship with money. It's the title of a new book from Brad Hewitt and James Moline. Brad is in studio today, president and CEO of Thrivent Financial, and we've got a copy of the book to give away. We're doing an email drawing if you go to myfaithradio.com, and you can click on the Connecting Faith show page to sign up for that. We're going to talk more about how we can develop contentment and generosity in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith. My guest today on Connecting Faith is Brad Hewitt. Brad is the president and CEO of Thrivent Financial. They're the country's largest fraternal benefit society. It's a Fortune 500 organization. And they're leading a nationwide movement of Christians in their communities to be wise with money and live generously. And Brad has co-written a great book called Your New Money Mindset, Create a Healthy Relationship with Money. Brad, is that something that can actually be accomplished about leading a nationwide movement of Christians and their communities to be wise with money? I mean, what does that really look like in practice?
Well, we know that about 12% of active Christians have a surplus money mindset. And if we could even change that a small amount, I have in the book some statistics at the end of what that would mean to the world. It would actually change the world in a meaningful way. And so the idea is that clearly that's something where I personally believe it's a challenge. It's a God-sized challenge, yeah. But I also believe with all my heart that as we actually help people to have this healthy relationship with money, it would not only free them up, it would free most of our churches up to meet their community needs in a very different way. It would actually change the way Christians are seen in this country and around the world. And so I see it as something for our organization that is a must do. And my observation is the Christian church has always grown when it's been generous. And the church is nothing but a collection of the people who are in that community. And so as the people in that community can be generous, I think it's a wonderful tool for our churches to make a difference in their community.
Now, Brad, it's a personal question, but I mean, you're CEO of a Fortune 500 organization, and there are fellow CEOs and presidents of organizations in the Fortune 500 that would be making, 10, 20 times as much as you. I mean, if you were making more, you could give more.
Right.
So do you ever think about that in your low moments?
Honestly, I don't. I think that's okay. Actually been one of the it's a great question because people ask me that all the time. And I know people won't believe this, but I have yet to ever ask for a raise, a amount of money. And I actually, if I've ever asked anything, I've asked them to not give me as much because at some point you actually realize the burden that comes with being a good steward, and it gets harder to actually be a good steward. You know, in Proverbs, there's the one prayer that is I think it's the only prayer about money in the whole Bible that I've found, and it's Lord, don't give me too little, don't give me too much, because if you give me too little, I might dishonor you, and if you give me too much, I might forget you, and I really do worry about that when blessings come and you realize that you're a vessel to give those away, it becomes harder and harder to give them away wisely.
Yeah. Well, I know that your home has been just kind of another avenue of gratitude and generosity as well. I think a house church, right?
Yeah, we have a house church, and part of it is trying to see everything we have as a gift from God and how to use that for His glory. And we, again, because of my position, we have a house that's wonderful for entertaining, and it's also a great place for our church to meet. And we're part of a church plant in the urban area, and there aren't lots of big spaces and urban areas to meet, and so we've been doing a church plant in our house, and we also use it to do fundraisers. So we recently had a fundraiser for Shop with Cops, and for Christmas time, and I just think of it as one of those things where as you're blessed, you can use those assets God's given you to be a blessing to others, and so that's Sue and I just keep saying, what we've been given, how do we use that to glorify God?
Speaking of Christmas time, it is that season, time for probably overspending, but also time for giving generously. Talk a little bit about that. How do we maybe realign our thinking about what we can be doing this time of year to really have an impact?
Yeah, I actually have a love-hate relationship with this season. It is probably my favorite season of all. I think this whole sense of celebrating giving and generosity and really understanding God's grace and giving us His Son and kind of the world celebrating that generosity and people going out and actively trying to find ways to bless other people. And like most things, we've been able to take a really good thing and then also make it into a really bad thing. And I cringe every time, we have to hear a sermon or something on the real meaning of Christmas, and, because it's partly true that it's a good lesson to hear. And so part of what I've observed and kind of in my own life is if we can actually make the season about thinking about generosity and thinking about God's generosity and our generosity to others, what a wonderful thing to celebrate together as a society. And I think this is the time where we're tempted to overspend. And again, if you take that one principle, the 25 times principle, living well below our means includes us giving gifts, and a lot of times we want to give more lavishly than we should. And I thought you might ask me this question. I was just thinking about some of the best gifts I've gotten, and a few of the best gifts I've gotten have been the smallest things from my kids whose heart and soul went into that gift to really brighten my day. And it wasn't because of how much they spent, but because of the emotion they put behind it. And again, their relationship with that gift was more important than the dollar amount of that gift. So, you know, I just hope we can all celebrate God's generosity and find a way to do it and still live below our means.
Yeah. You know, there is something about, you know, that sometimes we think about generosity, to do it without recognition. I mean, there that root kind of pops up in my life sometimes. I'm sure it probably does in yours and everybody's.
Well, there's a story in the book that I told when I was in high school. We actually did. It was called 10 Brave Christians, and we got together, and it was a kind of spiritual discipline program where you had to be, you know, you had to get up at 5:30 in the morning, and you had to do a whole bunch of Bible reading, and you had to do one generous act that would be completely unrecognized. And we all thought as high school kids that the hardest thing was to be get up at 5:30 in the morning and do this. And what we found at the end of it was that actually doing acts of generosity without getting benefit, without being recognized, were the hardest thing to do. Not because they're hard to do, but it was hard to not be recognized for them. Mm-hmm. And you have this kind of duality in the Bible where it says, you know, don't do your good deeds in front of men. On the other hand, is be a light, you know, you don't put a light under a bushel. And it's this tension of how do you actually think about the good we're doing? And one way, talk about it, but do it in a way that it's really glorifying God and not yourself. And I think that's actually a challenge when it comes to being generous, is how can you do things where you encourage other believers to be generous and yet you don't do it for self-aggrandizement.
So how did Paul learn to be content? Because obviously something that can be learned. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, I've had want, I've had plenty, but I've learned to be in every state, learned to be content. I don't think he'd been to Iowa, but no, that was that's another joke. Anyway, so how did he learn, and what? How do we learn to be content?
Well, again, I think that is part of what we're discovering is there are ways to learn to be content. There are ways to learn to have an abundant mindset. And part of that process is, to some degree, to choose to be live below your means. So when Sue and I actually went from being the CEO of a pharmaceutical technology company to work for the church, and we were going to make a lot less, we thought that was going to be just about impossible. And we weren't in want, but it was a really interesting process. Is as soon as we moved to a different income level, we learned that we could make it. It was fine. I remember when our kids were little and we were both making about the same amount of money, and she decided to stay home, we thought, how in the world are we ever going to be able to survive on half of our income? And somehow it all worked. And I think part of learning is to have this courageous act to trust God and live in want. My daughter was in the Philippines and in the Peace Corps, and her where she was living, her experience was she had intermittent electricity, intermittent water. She slept on a foam mattress on the floor. Her comment was, I've learned that there's a big difference between wants and needs. Mm. And she's a very contented person. And I think some of it is learning by taking the chance of being in want and taking that chance of being generous.
So did your prayer life change? Did you pray maybe about money and needs in a different way than you did when you were a CEO to working in a church ministry?
I'd like to tell you that my prayer life was brilliant and all of those kinds of things. That would be really wonderful to tell you, but I would.
You notice I'm not telling about my prayer life, so we're just going to skip that.
No, but you know, it is interesting. As I reflect, most of it was praying more like David, is don't abandon me, God. Mm-hmm. I'm trusting you. Kind of, you better come through. It wasn't. I have to say, it wasn't. It was much more of an honest prayers of, am I doing the right thing? I'm trusting you, God. Not so much of what you'd expect. And I think that's part of that learning to be content is as you get older, you see God does deliver. God does help you through that that process. But my prayers were more pleased than
yeah. Well, in fact, I think in the book you talked about, even sort of planning for the future, that, yes, I mean, you plan, but at the same time, you trust God, and it's sort of a paradox there where you just, there's only so much you can do.
Right. In fact, that was one of the things that we found from as we started interviewing people who were in surplus, because that was part of the how did people get there, especially mm-hmm. since it didn't matter of income. Mm-hmm. And as we were interviewing people, you know, I had heard kind of this, well, I just trust God and yeah. so forth and so on. And I thought that was just kind of a cop-out kind of answer. But it wasn't. It was actually a mindset difference. Mm-hmm. And what they basically did is they actually had done a lot of planning. They actually had lived below their means. They had savings. They had done a lot of the behaviors that were helpful. So planning, they did have long-term plans. They actually were very concerned about their kids and their grandkids and others. So it wasn't a lack of planning. It was a mindset that actually was, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to plan and I'm going to trust God. And I know I need to do both of those things. And it's planning doesn't prevent something from happening. And if something happens, I'm going to trust God. And so it's this really odd paradox, like you said, this paradox of both trusting and planning that, again, as we look at people who behave and their behaviors around surplus, it's one of the really consistent themes is they have long-term plans. They often go out and get professional advice. They're not people who just trust God and then let it all go.
Great insight today from Brad Hewitt. We're talking about your new money mindset, create a healthy relationship with money. It's always an important topic and a good time to be talking about it as we learn about contentment and generosity and finding some of the keys there. Brad's president, CEO of Thrivent Financial, and he's co-author of the new book, Your New Money Mindset. We do have a copy that we're going to give away here at the end of the hour, so if you want to be part of the drawing, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. Use the email link there to send us your contact information. We'll put you in for the drawing for this great resource. And we'll talk more with Brad in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We've been talking today about developing a healthy relationship with money. Create a healthy relationship with money is the subtitle of Brad Hewitt's book. Brad and Jim Moline have co-written this called Your New Money Mindset. It's from Tyndale House. Brad is president and CEO of Thrivent Financial, and they're a Fortune 500 company, and they serve more than 2.3 million members nationwide. And his focus has been that, you know, if we are wise with money and generosity, that they go hand in hand in a new money relationship. And Brad, maybe, you know, because you mentioned that there's this hand in hand, we plan, but we also trust God. Maybe just say a word about planning, because that is a key part of helping us live beneath our means. So what are some key steps and things we ought to be doing for planning?
Yeah, and as we look for planning, you know, one of the things that I would just say is that the two things that are probably the most important decisions you're going to make as we get to planning are square footage of house and how many wheels you have in the garage. And I hate to say this as a car guy, and we were talking about that, but, you know, we hear a lot of folks talk about, you know, spending money at Starbucks or buying Christmas gifts this time of the year, and all of that, some of that behavior is what the root of a lot of the overspending and people struggling and everything. And the fact of the matter, that's generally not what the issue is in terms of planning. And in fact, we pay less for going out to eat, we pay less for utilities, we pay less for appliances, we pay less for almost all of those things that you hear so much about in budgeting, except for two things, is we tend to overspend on houses and cars, which end up being, and I know I can personally vouch for overspending on cars, but we tend to overspend on houses and cars, and the hard part with those is they're generally not appreciating, they're generally depreciating assets practically, and they're hard to actually change. And once you're in, and so what ends up happening is as you do that, what ends up happening is that then controls so much of the rest of your planning and your budget, it becomes hard to live below your means. So early steps for young families or other families is making sure as you're making those choices about houses and cars that you're really thinking about what would it really look like to live below our means at that point. And so it's easy to say. It's really hard to do. I mean, I think it's been, frankly, one of the things that Sue and I have been blessed with is because we tended to both have that mindset when we got married, and we tended to do that. But then I would say, so let's just that's a foundation, and if you don't do that, it becomes really hard. Yeah. Then there's the whole point of, you know, should you get a professional financial planner and everything? And the answer to that is, you know, we actually do provide those. That's something that we absolutely believe in. But depending on your income level, frankly, some of the steps are actually relatively straightforward. And so, you know, there's some simple things you can do online. There's some simple things for most people. It's actually putting money into an emergency savings, getting a bank account, getting out of debt. Paying all your credit cards off, doing all of those kinds of things. So debt management, getting a sense of savings. You know, frankly, for a lot of people, it's getting off what's called the hedonistic treadmill of if I just had this, then I'd be happy, and then that lasts. And if I just had this new game, or if I knew just had this new whatever, really trying to work on getting off that hedonistic treadmill. And then as you actually do have more, I do think it's one of those things where getting a professional financial planner actually does make sense. I know we do that, and it's really helpful, partly just to actually have somebody to be a coach and to help you through. There's a lot of really complexity out in the market, and it's nice to have a second opinion or a first opinion.
Coming up to the first of the year, is there maybe a step one that we could take, say, if, maybe just in changing our mindset? I was thinking maybe it's the money mindset assessment maybe would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. As people have taken it, it's one of the things I heard. I just got an email from a friend who's a business colleague, and he was at Thanksgiving, just wrote me a really nice note, and his comment was something to the effect of, I had never thought about a relationship with money until I talked to you and I read your book. And he said, I feel a little bit like the Tin Man and you're Dorothy and you're oiling my stingy fists and they're just starting to open up. And his observation was, is he had always had the intent and the heart for generosity, but just couldn't ever get there. And he's starting to figure out as he becomes generous. And it's, by the way, it's not just money. It's time. It's your talent. It's yourself being generous with, you know, a smile at the grocery store when the stress is on. But I'd say, you know, one of the first things I would do if you're going to do a January pledge to do something, the resolution I would make if you're really worried about money is I would try to take whatever resource you can, if it's some money, if it's time, if it's just a smile because you don't have the resources to do it, for a period of time, 10 days, 30 days, 40 days, whatever you think is right, just try doing something once a week, and just that's just an act of generosity, and see what ends up happening to your attitude. Not what happens to your budget, not what happens to the people around you, just what happens to your own mindset. And I think you'll find it starts to change the way you think about things.
What does God think about money, or how does God think about money?
Well, I'll tell you how I think about money. Okay. And this is because I don't really like to speak for God.
Well, that's wise. Yes, and I could rephrase that question.
No. So, but. and I hopefully this is what he thinks too. Here's how. This was given to me by a pastor that really did help change some of my thinking about fundraising and everything. He said, "Money is simply love or service in a storable fashion. And to me, the question was, and as I've been thinking about it, let me say it that way, as I've been thinking about it, there's one really important stewardship question. Then if you believe that's true, the question is, who am I serving with every decision I'm making? And so I think, you know, when Jesus actually was faced with the question about the coin and, you know, he said, render unto Caesar what's Caesar's and render unto God what's God's, you know, technically everything is God. So, you know, but I think money is this really interesting way that we actually can store love and service. And so for part of what we've been saying at Thrivent, one of the two most important stewardship questions that you can really ask yourself is, how much is enough? So you can really get that sense of contentment and that sense of abundance. How much is really enough? And so even if I get more, I don't have to keep just going up to 25% more. How much is enough? And with every decision, who am I serving? And I think those two questions, and the kind of my joke for me is, and if I keep answering me to the second question, I better go back to question one and how much is enough? But I think those are, to some degree, I think, you know, man's created money. God has created everything. And money is a wonderful tool. But as soon as we make it the treasure, it masters us.
I was thinking about, you know, many people recommend reading a chapter of Proverbs every day since there's 31. And I thought, you know, that's probably a good recommendation. I know just the book is full of a lot of message paraphrase of the Proverbs, which are wonderful, but that's probably a good thing just to reacquaint ourselves with the biblical principles about money.
So, yeah, and there's lots in there. The wisdom chapter, the wisdom literature in the Bible is wonderful. In fact, as you know, we've talked about before, as the, you know, the proverb that probably made Jim and I write the book more than anything is Proverbs 11:24, and I think the New Living Translation is something like, the world of the generous gets bigger and bigger, and the world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller. And Jim and I had both agreed that we were the two most stingy people we knew. And not probably true, but it felt like, you know, it feels like that. And I think that's been using the wisdom literature in the Bible as a way to remind us of some of these paradoxes that are just sometimes hard to wrap your brain around on how God thinks about things are really valuable.
Well, I think all of us, if we're honest, would have to admit that we got those stingy roots go real deep, you know, and part of it is maybe just fear, but it's to start with gratitude and experience generosity and to see a new relationship with money happen. That's more rewarding than almost anything else.
Well, that's what people find out is, of course, as they start becoming generous, you find that it actually builds community, it builds relationships, it creates a sense of contentment, it actually creates a sense of confidence. Is all of a sudden, I mean, so many people live in fear of insecurity of, oh, am I going to have enough? Ron Blue, who wrote the foreword of the book, said, you know, the three questions do I have enough? How much will be enough? And am I going to have enough over the long run? And I think some of those three questions are exactly right. Those are some of the things that drive fear. Generosity helps us to build that confidence that, you know what, I have people who have my back, other Christians, other people in my church. I can count on them even if something bad happens.
Yeah. Good word for the season and for the season ahead, and it's really appropriate any season to be talking about a new money mindset. Create a healthy relationship with money is the title of the book we've been referencing. Brad Hewitt's co-author, along with Jim Moline, Brad's president, CEO of Thrivent Financial, and good friend of Faith Radio, and we're just honored to have you spend some time with us today, Brad. Thanks.
Well, thank you. It's always fun to talk about one of my favorite topics.
Brad Hewitt joining us today on Connecting Faith. You got a copy of the book, Your New Money Mindset, to give away. And again, you can sign up via email at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith.